This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Science Interrupted, The Impact of Coronavirus. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Over the last few months, field research has stopped, research trips have been canceled, and campuses are closed. Many scientists are stuck at home, like the rest of us, cut off from their labs and experiments. So what's the impact of all of those closures? Reporter Jad Slayman looked into that by way of the research mouse.
Back in mid-March, when most of us were hearing the words shelter in place for possibly the first time, research labs across the country were busy with what they call sacking.
You know, there are a lot of different terms that are used that I think people use to protect themselves from the reality of this.
Annika Allman is a research technician at a University of Pennsylvania lab, works with hundreds of mice as part of cancer studies.
Personally, I prefer to say we kill them, but a common term is sacking.
It's short for sacrifice, as in for science, for the greater good.
Research mice, you might imagine, are not long for this world. At her lab, Annika is usually the one to send them into the hereafter. Most of the mice born there, even in normal times, aren't suitable for experiments for some reason or another.
Euthanizing these mice on a regular basis is just part of the job, and it's not a fun part of the job, but it is a necessity.
Still, what happened back in March, Friday the 13th, it was different. A massacre.
We have a weekly lab meeting, and we had it virtually, and we were like, okay, we need to figure out how to shut everything down.
They had 500 cages of mice and a looming stay-at-home order for most staff. You can't just take that many mice home with you, and many can't survive outside sterile settings anyway. So most of the mice, they were going to get sacked. Annika personally euthanized hundreds.
You take their cages, take off the tops, put it in a machine called the Euthanex, which I have a lot of feelings about. It's essentially just a CO2 chamber, and you turn the button on, and you wait for 20 minutes to half an hour, and they died. It is unpleasant to watch, but far from the worst.
That was just that Friday. Annika was sent home after that, and the stay-behind staff continued sacking.
Yeah, so we did get an email about, I guess 2 weeks after we shut things down, that basically requested that we stop asking them to do it because of the emotional toll that it was having on them, because just in the amount of the masses that they had to kill.
For Annika, though, the animals' deaths didn't hit her on that level. Before you get the wrong idea about her, no, she's a self-described animal lover, a vegetarian. One of her pet cats scurries across the laptop as we talk. But she didn't mourn the euthanized mice so much as the science the mice represented.
I had to kill mice that I had planned experiments for, that I'm still upset are dead. And not because of their lives, unfortunately, for them, but because to do this research is going to be a lot, it's going to take a lot longer now.
Untold thousands of mice were sacked in the early weeks of the U.S. pandemic response. The animals in Annika's lab, and hundreds of labs like it, are the bedrock of research into human diseases. Pick a disease, an illness. There's a mouse model for that, a mouse created specifically to study that disease.
So whatever disease you can think of, you know, epilepsy, obesity, metabolic syndrome, we have a mouse model that you can genetically engineer to recapitulate that particular disease.
Kat Lutz is director of the Mouse Repository at Jackson Labs. They're a nonprofit where many labs get their founder mice to start colonies of their own for research. The Jackson Lab has some 11,000 types of designer mice cryopreserved in their repository. 80% of them don't exist anywhere else. Mice found their way into labs by way of so-called mouse fanciers.
They would keep mice as pets, and they would also select those mice that had spontaneous mutations, for example, in coat color or ears or craniofacial, long tails, kinky tails, so whatever they could see, you know, maybe spotted mice or things like that, and they would start inbreeding them.
Mice breed very quickly and very often, so mutations tend to spring up fairly regularly. Fanciers were after aesthetic mutations, but scientists quickly found fanciers could provide mice with more utilitarian mutations. This mouse with the kinky tail, it can develop diabetes or colon cancer or this rare neurologic disease.
You know, between mouse and humans, the gene conservation is incredibly high at the level of the coding sequence. And so it was really quite translational.
Mice and people share about 98% of their genetic code.
The mutations that you would see in the mice would often translate to the mutations that you see in people. And so, you know, really mice have become the model organism for humans.
So if you can cure a cancer in a mouse, that's a big step towards curing it in a person. Genetic engineering became a thing really in the 90s and accelerated with tech like CRISPR in recent years. The result is research mice today precisely engineered in thousands of ways to test thousands of treatments. It's why a pet store mouse costs a couple bucks, while a research mouse can run hundreds or even thousands of dollars. Kat's favorite mouse is this little white one.
It was a mouse called Delta 7, and it was a mouse that we used to study a very devastating neurological disease called spinal muscular atrophy.
Delta 7 mice were engineered to develop this human disease, SMA. It's a bit like ALS, as in the ice bucket challenge, but it presents in babies.
They're born very small, they're born very weak, and they don't live very long.
Kat worked with Delta 7 for years and years.
And I'm happy to say that I don't work on it anymore.
Because Delta 7 eventually led to real therapies, lots of them. SMA is largely treatable today, in large part thanks to those white mice.
A lot of those kids, when they're diagnosed early enough, actually go on to live quite normal lives and are riding bicycles at the age of 3.
But the thing is, labs everywhere have their own Delta 7s, monumentally important mice models specifically designed to study specific diseases or treatments. Some labs have completely unique models that don't exist anywhere else. And when the pandemic started picking up speed and labs were closing, those mice were at risk.
We received a number of SOS calls, you know, for animals. Could you please cryopreserve my mouse because I do need to take them off the shelf.
By preserve, she means cryopreserve. Freeze the sperm of a lab's unique mouse model so you can use it to jumpstart a new colony later. The guy answering those SOS calls was Robert Taft. He tells me about a workshop he led years ago where he asked scientists to imagine worst-case disasters, mostly storms and earthquakes, that result in their mouse colonies being lost.
I had a scientist come to me and say, Rob, I just realized that if that scenario ever did play out, I'm making sandwiches in Bar Harbor as my next job.
Meaning the end of that specifically designed mouse is the end of her career. Before the pandemic threatened mice colonies, most of the danger was extreme weather.
Allison, Katrina, Sandy.
They all threatened incredibly valuable mice. With the pandemic, it was like this extreme weather scenario was playing out all across the country and all at once.
This is a completely new challenge. No one's faced anything quite like it before in this country.
Before all this, cryopreserving your mouse model was like this thing you should do, but something you might just not get around to, like checking your smoke detector batteries every month.
When you're doing research, the pressure is really do the next experiment, publish a paper, get a grant written.
Maybe you and I didn't stock up on hair dye. Many scientists didn't freeze enough mouse sperm.
The research community is no different than anybody else. Any other sector of society in that regard. I think the speed at which some of these changes happened caught everyone off guard.
So very quickly, in some cases with only hours to spare, Jackson Labs had to send out specifically adapted vans to essentially rescue these mice before closures, save them from the Euthanex machine.
They were going into places like New York and into Boston where there were hotspots. There may have very well been cases where they were going. And they went anyway. So, I have a lot of respect for them.
It was a risk, but when we're finally on the other side of this pandemic, these mice will play a major role in getting science started again without having to start from scratch.
And that's exactly what happened with the mouse model for COVID-19.
Today, Kat is working with another special little white mouse for corona research. It was created for SARS over a decade ago and cryopreserved, just waiting till it was needed again.
That was Jed Slaman reporting.